This is station PCJ. Ladies and gentlemen, we continue our program.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si.
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning, or to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea. I like a nice cup of tea with my dinner, and a nice cup of tea with my tea. And when it's time for bed, there's a lot to be said for a nice cup of tea. They say it's not nutritious, but darn it, it's delicious. And that's all that matters to me. It turns your meat to leather. Well, let's all die together. The one drink in paradise is tea.
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning, for to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea. I like a nice cup of tea with my dinner, and a nice cup of tea with my tea. And when it's time for bed, there's a lot to be said for a nice cup of tea.
As Eddie Starts might be saying at this very moment, good morning, good evening, and good afternoon. Welcome to the International Happy Station Show. I'm Keith Parent. Now, you probably gathered we began the show slightly differently, and that's because a number of you have been asking to hear the original theme that was used for the show during the Eddie Starts era. Now, for those who are not familiar with Eddie Starts, Eddie hosted the show from the late 1920s to 1969, December of that year. So, we decided to open up today's show with that, including at the beginning a very old PCJ station ID, which was probably from the mid-1930s. We'll be using that theme from time to time, and hopefully you enjoyed it. Well, welcome everyone. No matter where you are, you can be in the North Pole dressed up warm. And if you're in Europe, you probably are dressed up warm, because a few people have been writing in saying it's very chilly and cold. Well, actually, I shouldn't be making fun of you, because here in this part of the world, it's also been chilly and cold. And I know some of you are saying, you're in the, Southeast Asia? How cold can it get? Well, not the same way, but it is bone-chilling, nevertheless. Anyway, we do have a special program today. It is a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about a particular thing with a particular guest. Our guest is Darlene Arden. She is a specialist, and she is certified. Certified as a consultant, that is, not certified. Well, maybe she is. I know I am, but that's a whole other story. She's a certified animal behavior consultant with small dogs, and also with cats. And I came across her not too long ago. She's an absolutely fascinating woman, and she is our guest today. And of course, the music is going to be on a dog theme. Now, since, of course, we cannot really talk directly to animals, and they can't talk directly to us, well, unless we can learn their languages. Sounds like I'm segueing to a song. Well, actually, I am. The song is Talk to the Animals. It's performed by yours truly. It's one of a number of sessions that we did last summer. And we now bring it to you, Talk to the Animals, from the musical Dr. Dolittle that starred Rex Harrison, sung by yours truly.
If I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting to a chimp in chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah, what a neat achievement it would be. If I could talk to the animals, learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig and flea. I would converse in polar bear and python. I would curse, yes, in fluent kangaroo. If people ask me, can I speak rhinoceros? I'd say, of course it is, but can you? If I conferred with our furry friends, man to animal, think of the amazing repartee. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they would squeak and squawk and grunt and speak to me. If I spoke slang to orangutans, the advantages any fool on earth can plainly see. Discussing Eastern art and dramas with intellectual llamas, that's a big step forward, you'll agree. I'd learn to speak in antelope and turtle. My Pekingese would be extremely good. If I were asked to sing in hippopotamus, I'd say one autobus, and I would. If I could parlay with podridums, it's a fairy tale worthy of Hans Andersen and Grimm. A man who walks with the animals, talks with the animals, grunts and squeaks and squawks with the animals, and they would squeak and squawk and talk to me. I don't know about you, but I think this would be the perfect time to have the animals themselves sing the remainder of the song. All right, guys, are you ready? Take it away. It's over to you.
Yours truly, and Talk with the Animals, beginning this week's edition of the International Happy Station Show. Our special guest today is Darlene Arden. She is a certified animal behavior consultant. Now, there are probably some of you right now who have dogs that are a little bit unruly. Yes, you try to, you know, to make them more manageable, but you're having a difficult time. Well, this is certainly the show for you. Darlene has written many books. And if you want to find out the link to her website, we'll be giving out that later on in the show. And you can also find a link on our website. So, we now go to Darlene Arden. Darlene, thank you very much for joining us on the show. I want to begin by asking, because I was reading your website.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody doesn't know what you do, could somebody best describe you as, let's say, a dog psychiatrist or an animal psychiatrist?
Well, it's not as well. The animals do talk, but with body language, and you have to be a very good observer of body language. But no, I'm a behavior consultant. And I'm a certified behavior consultant. That was not certifiable. That was certified. Trained to watch dogs, understand them. Cats as well. I'm also certified for cats. I suppose people would want to think in terms of psychiatrists because either A, it's a great joke, or B, it's the closest they can come to any sort of description.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great deal of similarity in what I do and what a pediatrician does in some ways, just as there is for a veterinarian and a pediatrician. I am by no means a veterinarian, but in other words, the client can't speak. I have to rely on the owner to speak the language, and then I have to be very good at observing body language and interactions. And a lot of the things that seem outrageous to the human are normal dog behavior, and we just have to find alternative behaviors. For instance, most dogs like to jump up on people when they come to the door to greet them. That's a very normal greeting behavior for a dog. But in human society, that doesn't fly. So nobody wants their dog jumping up on everyone. Well, I hope they don't want it to happen, because if grandma comes to the door, grandma can be knocked over and break her hip. A child can be knocked down. Some people can be frightened. They think they're being attacked when the dog just wants to kiss them. So the best thing to do is teach an alternate behavior. If your dog is sitting, he can't possibly be jumping up and kissing. So the dog is taught to wait for that attention until the people are seated, or if he's sitting, he can be petted.
It's interesting that you say that, and the reason is most of my listeners know that I have three dogs. I have a Labrador, a Golden Retriever, and a little mixed dog. And the retriever and the Labrador, those two are quite well behaved. I've had them since pups, and they never really jumped on people. The smaller one, okay, smaller. I say smaller. that's relative.
Right,
he's still rather big. But I found him in the street, and he was maybe only about 3 months old, and he was filthy. I didn't even know he was white until I brought him home and removed his fleas and everything and brought him to the vet, and they even put him in quarantine for about a week because he'd been living on the street. And when I brought him home, of all my three dogs, he is the one with the strongest personality. Literally the strongest personality. And when I have friends that come over or other people that are coming over for the first time, I always say, look, he will want to jump on you to get attention, right? And I've noticed with him, he doesn't jump on me because when I get home, I ignore him. I completely ignore him and he doesn't jump on me. And I'll tell this to people, but they don't pay any attention. They go, oh, he's so cute. And then all of a sudden, he starts jumping on them. And I said to I just told you, don't pay attention to him.
Mm-hmm. And you're exactly right. The best thing you can do is enlist them to help you before they come over. That way, they have come with a different mindset. I'm trying to train my dog to sit before he's petted to be ignored. Could you please help me? Could you please come over and we'll practice at the door before you come in? And do it two or three times at the door. This way, they have to pay attention because they're helping you as friends. And you don't have to deal with the aftermath of the dog being rewarded for bad behavior or unwanted behavior. So you're also training your friends, but we won't tell them.
I should tell them, actually. It's not my dog that needs training. It's you.
Anyway.
Let's get back to this for a moment. There's something actually that what you were just saying right now that made me think of something that I have been telling people for a long time. Now, I grew up around dogs. My parents, we always had many, many dogs at home, and my parents still do have many dogs. And many times a dog's behavior is either because they want attention or also because of the owner itself. They act in a certain way because people may laugh at this, but dogs are smarter than we may think.
Exactly.
If a dog knows he can get away with something, he will do it.
He will also train the owner very well.
Yes. So when you go into a situation then, who do you work with more? Do you work more with the animal, or do you also work a lot with the owner?
I have to work with the owner. I have to train the owner. I have to teach them what the dog is about. We have to discuss the dog's behavior, their interactions with the dog, what they've been doing, how the dog reacts, and I have to be able to point out to them what they're doing and how they need to change their behavior in order to help change the dog. And they have to practice in between sessions. It does no good for them to see it once and then wait for me to come back in a week. That's not going to work. It's like taking the dog to classes and not practicing at home. You have to realize that training is an ongoing, almost you have to turn it into a hobby. It's a situation. You really, everything the dog does is a training opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and it should be pleasant. I use operant conditioning, clicker training. Somebody is uncoordinated or has had a stroke and can't manage that, then I use lure and reward. Throw away the choke collars, throw away the prong collars. You don't need them. The newer scientific methods work. They work easily. A child can do it. And it's the difference between working for a boss who, when you show him your best work, says, boy, that's ugly, and you're stupid, and by the way, your mother dresses you funny, or the boss who looks at it and says, gee, that's really good. I'll bet you'll do an even better job next time. Which boss do you want? So the reward is that the dog is receiving positive reinforcement. And that would be whatever appeals to the dog, whether it's a tiny treat, chance to play with a special toy, or just time with you. Some of them are motivated by affection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they want is affection. So that becomes the reinforcer, what you do to, you know, oh, if I do this, then I get that, and I really like that. Kind of like we like money to get paid so we can keep a roof over our heads and food and all of that good stuff. So that becomes the dog's pay. But the owner has to understand that what they do will directly impact what the dog is doing. And they need to start thinking a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I had a physician ask me, you know, they hate to give free advice, you know, at a cocktail party.
Right.
You wouldn't think about walking up to them and saying, I've got such a pain right here. Doctor, what do you think it is? However, they will think nothing of walking up to me and saying, you know, I've got this problem with my dog. So there was the doctor, well-educated, advanced degrees, a specialist in oncology. And he said, you know, I've got a problem. I said, really? He said, the dog is so smart. How do I get him to stop taking the food off the groceries off the kitchen counter? And I looked at him and said, when you bring them in, don't you put them away right away? And he just looked at me and said, oh. Well, duh. Oh, I didn't say that to him, but oh, how I wanted to. I was biting my tongue. Simple things like that. Don't give the dog an opportunity to get into trouble. You want to set him up to win.
Mm-hmm.
He can't possibly steal the groceries if you put them away.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy's for sale. I must take a trip to California and leave my poor sweetheart alone. If he has a dog, he won't be lonesome, and the doggie will have a good home. How much is that doggie in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggie in the window? I do hope that doggie's for sale. I read in the papers there are robbers with flashlights that shine in the dark. My love needs a doggie to protect him and scare them away with one bark. I don't want a bunny or a kitty. I don't want a parrot that talks. I don't want a bowl of little fishies. He can't take a goldfish for a walk. That doggy in the window, the one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy's for sale.
The one and only Patty Page with How Much Is That Doggy in the Window. You're listening to the International Happy Station Show. You can listen to this program and all past programs at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. I also want to mention that this month's edition of Media Network Plus will be up on the website very shortly, including the new installment of Jazz for the Asking. You may remember last week George Evans was our guest on the program. The full interview was used on on this edition of Jazz for the Asking, just go to the page for that show at pcjmedia.com. All right, we now continue with our wonderful conversation with Darlene Arden. Well, you know, you're going to laugh at this, but the three dogs that I have, the Labrador and the Retriever, they're 6 years old now. Mm-hmm. And Schoolboy, who's the white dog, who's much smaller. Well, like I said, he's big, but he's smaller than them. The problem that I have with him, and it's not really a problem because I it doesn't really bother me that much, but he's one of these dogs who's extremely curious about everything. Mm-hmm. If he sees something closed, he wants to know how to open it. And one day I was in my kitchen, and he just kept wandering around the refrigerator, just looking at it, trying to open it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he did it.
Oh, smart boy.
He does that with doors.
Mm-hmm.
He does that with garbage cans. Luckily, he doesn't do it with my garbage can because it's rather heavy. But the previous one, it had a pedal that you had to push with your foot to open mm-hmm. the lid. He would push it with his paw to open the lid.
Of course he would.
And the funny thing is, when I look at the other two, I always refer to the Labrador and Retriever, Boppy and Ginger, as two ex-hippies who are always stoned.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what they're like.
That sounds about right.
They're just...
The other one had to live by his wits, and he's obviously extremely smart anyway. But you're smart to have, very wise, to have a garbage can they can't get into, because eating garbage is a good way to trigger pancreatitis, and you don't want that to happen.
Well, the thing is, he still tries, mm-hmm. and he doesn't give up until I say to him, go, and then he wanders away. But his personality, like I said, it's odd, because I will have friends that come over, and they'll say, your other two dogs are always in spaceland.
Mm-hmm.
They interact well with humans, but after a while they get bored. He needs to be next to you. He needs to be next to you all the time.
He really appreciates being rescued, and now he's not letting you out of his sight, because you are the source of all good things. You are a resource. You're his primary resource. So he not only loves you, he knows he needs you. He gets food. He gets water from you. He knows who's feeding him. He knows who's giving him attention and affection. And as long as he's not resource guarding, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, what,
if he were resource guarding, he would be growling at the other dogs. He would be growling at other people.
Well, this is the other thing I wanted to ask you about. Because with him, I don't know if you've come across this case before, but there are a number of kids in my building, and they always come up. I live on the top floor, and I have this, mm-hmm. this large balcony, and they always come upstairs wanting to play with my dogs. Now, for some reason... This one, I don't know if you've ever seen this kind of case before, but with children, he is fine. He'll just lay there, and they can pull his ears and sit on top of him and throw the ball around. He plays with them. But every time their parents come to get him, he gets angry at the parents.
Oh, how funny. Usually, it's the reverse. They don't want to be around children because children are loud, noisy, run, leap on top of them. And they can never figure out what they could have done to have elicited that kind of response from a human.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently thinks that these are dog-sized people, and he's having fun with them, and they're just removing another source of pleasure for him. They're another resource. They play with him. He likes the interaction. If he didn't like the interaction, he'd either, A, bite them, because he has teeth, and anything with teeth will bite if they're hurt, or he could get up and walk away. But if he's enjoying the interaction and he's playing with them, he's like the little kid who doesn't want to go home from the playground.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you taking my friends away?
How do you deal with, let's say, dogs that are unfriendly with other people, especially like if you're walking them in the street?
You have to be very careful about this. This is the time you may need to call in a professional to work with you. Because if you have a dog who will bite, you know, and bite first and discuss it later, then you want to walk this dog in places where you're not going to encounter other people. The dog should have been well socialized when he was young. Window of opportunity closes at 12 weeks or 3 months, whichever comes first. After that, it takes much longer. And if you have a dog who's a real problem, in this way. In this country, you could be sued. Mainly because if your dog attacks, not only that, if he's not up on his shots, if he hasn't had rabies shots, and that's required in your country, you could lose him. They might have, you know, to test if they have rabies, they kill the dog.
Mm-hmm.
They quarantine first, but there are times when they will just go right for the kill on it and cut off the head and send it to a lab, and it's disgusting, and it's frightening, and it's, I mean, it's horrible. I've had friends who have had dogs that somebody else might have euthanized because they were literally vicious towards other people or other dogs. But they've managed them and kept them at home and kept them busy. If they have a yard, they keep them very busy. They keep them active with teaching them dog tricks. And it's not that because they could manage the situation, the dog could stay alive. Training is something that can do wonders. Can it perform miracles? No. It depends upon the degree of aggression in the dog.
But the aggression in the dog, where does that stem from? Does that stem from maybe something that is the dog just born that way, or is it something that they learned when they were young?
Yes, both. It could be either or. Some of them, I mean, there could be a brain tumor. They could have been born that way. Bad breeding. And it's just as important to breed for a mentally sound dog as a physically sound one. It could, and if you have a mixed breed, who knows what you're getting? I mean, you have no idea what's behind it. You just do your best judgment when you adopt it, and then raise it as well as you can, and do the best you can, and hope for a good outcome. And usually it is. It can be something that someone did to the dog. If the dog has been abused, they're going to bite first and ask questions later. But those dogs, some of them just retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Those dogs can be rehabilitated very often. Some can't. And that's judged on a case-by-case basis. I can't make blanket statements. It has to be the individual dog, the behavior, mm-hmm. where it came from, how the dog's reacting, some time in a normal situation with a very experienced person rehabilitating. And if that doesn't work, then there is no choice.
Thank you.
A favorite here on the International Happy Station, Bert Klampfert and his orchestra, with Me and You and A Dog Named Boo. That was a big hit for a singer by the name of Lobo. If you wish to get in touch with us, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. And by the way, do feel free to add us to your Twitter and Facebook. Just do a search in Twitter or Facebook, I just said like a moment ago, for PCJ Media. And you can keep up with some special programs that are coming up and everything else. We had a letter right here, which is actually an email, which comes from a young lady by the name of Inga, who lives in Denmark. And I'm sorry, Inga, but I cannot pronounce your last name. I tried, and I'm afraid if I tried anymore, it would just sound very silly. But you said, my name is very difficult to pronounce, so just call me Inga. All right, Inga. You were asking when are we going to be playing a lot more music on the show, because some people say we don't play enough music. And don't worry, we actually have an all-request show coming up very, very soon. Our guest today on the show is Darlene Arden. We're talking about animals, more specific, dogs, and the behavior of dogs. And she is a internationally renowned expert on animal behavior. Now, one of my questions to her is, how does somebody decide to go into this?
It's a long, circuitous route. But I ultimately ended up with behavior because I was inspired by Dr. Karen Overall many years ago. She was one of the first of the board-certified veterinary behaviorists. And before there was a board, I heard her speak. She was a veterinary behaviorist at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. She's now working at their medical school in the human medical department and still working with animals, however. And her lectures are a good deal about animals. But I heard her speak, and she said something that was, she was telling different stories about how she had gotten involved, and then she was talking about clients and their dogs. And she made such an incredible impression on me, and oddly enough, one of the stories that she told still stands out in my mind today. And it wasn't a story with a happy ending. It was a story that told how far the human can go in the wrong direction. She told the story of a woman who absolutely adored her dog. But the dog had bitten her husband so badly he'd ended up in the hospital a couple of times. He'd bitten just about anybody who came to visit. And they had tried everything, and nothing worked. This dog really, really needed to be put down. The dog wasn't happy, any happier than anybody else was. And after they'd tried everything, and she told this woman as nicely as she could, there really was no option. This was a dangerous dog, and there was no other option but euthanasia. And the woman didn't want to hear it. And finally, Dr. Overall said to her, well, what do you do if the paper boy comes to the door? And the woman, totally disengaged from reality, said, well, doesn't homeowners cover that? She thought her insurance would handle it. No. Well, she finally did put the dog down, but I thought, there are people out there who are that far gone that they just don't see. It shouldn't reach that point. Mm-hmm. So the more people we can reach about how to raise a dog properly. Now, that dog may have been born that way. It's possible that he was born aggressive, or he could have had a tumor, a brain tumor that caused that, although it had been going on for years, so I really don't know. I just know that the impact of that case and the rest of her stories had on me told me that I could do something more to help so that no one would reach that point. They may, but it wouldn't be because I hadn't tried. Or hopefully we could avoid a lot of that. So by training the dogs working on the human-animal bond, I became passionate about the human-animal bond. Have you ever been stabbed in the back by a dog or a cat? It's not going to happen, Keith.
Are there some dogs that, with all the training and all the effort put in, just can't be helped?
That was that dog, yes. There are those dogs that can't be helped, and unless they're living with someone who is so totally committed that they just about give up their own life, or work with them carefully. There's one that is a wonderful trainer in this country, Emma Parsons, who got involved because her own dog, through a series of stupid accidents, one stupid accident and then another, became very dog aggressive. She was walking him down the hall, and another dog kind of lunged into him, and it was quite accidental, and he became fearful. And she went to a trainer, and that person was using aversive techniques, and the dog got worse instead of better.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until she met Karen Pryor and learned about clicker training. She now works exclusively with aggression cases. I send aggression cases to her because I don't really like to do them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just heartbreaking. I'd rather set people off on the right road before they end up on the wrong road. But she worked with this dog, and there are other dogs. If you're working with a professional, there are other dogs trained so that you start 20 feet apart. And it's a very slow progression where the dogs pass closer and closer to each other. This can take months. But it reached a point where this dog, who died, I think, a year or two ago, could go out in demonstrations with her. But she knew that he had to be kept sort of under, he would sit sort of under her leg so that he felt safe in an insecure situation.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he was okay. And in that case, a lot of patience, a lot of time, a lot of effort. Now she's helping other people with their problems because she saw the difference it made in her dog. So can they? Yes, but it takes a very committed owner and a lot of patience and time. And if you have that much time, patience, and love, and the help of a professional, yes. But I don't want to give anyone the false impression that this is, you know, just add water and instant good dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen.
You know, with mine, it's rather amusing. Usually on the weekends, I will load them up in the car and take them off to the countryside in the mountains, mm-hmm. just outside Taipei. And the two older ones, they just stay with me. Schoolboy, on the other hand, has this thing. He likes to run up way ahead of you, run around and do circles and run around in different areas. And a few months ago, he ran off. He just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he would come back. Five, ten minutes later, he came back, and he had blood on his face.
Hmm.
He ran away again. All happy. He wasn't hurt. He came back with a chicken in his mouth.
Oh, no. He had a good time. He went and chased a chicken and killed it.
He went to chase a chicken and killed it. And this is the thing. Every time I take him for a walk in the park, with other dogs, he's fine. With cats, he's actually okay. But with things like birds and other farm animals, for some reason, he didn't kill the chicken. He just wanted to play with it.
That could be something that's in his background. Some dogs are kind of hardwired to do those things.
He's done the same with sheep. He wants to go play with the sheep, and I have no idea why. And one of the farmers that I know up in the mountains, he says, oh, is your dog coming? And he'll go in the pen where the sheep are and want to play with them.
Oh, he may have a herding instinct. And that to him would be fun. So it's entirely possible he would enjoy herding.
What about dogs that, let's say, don't get along? They get along with people, but they don't get along with other dogs. How do you help in that kind of situation, or how can you fix that kind of situation?
In that kind of situation, you work with a professional. They will work with you with another dog who is used to doing this, used to helping, and start perhaps walking 20 feet apart, you know, or across the street. And the dog is rewarded for good behavior, for ignoring the other dog or looking at the dog. The other choice is looking at the dog and not reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually, slowly, over a good deal of time, they can pass closer and closer to each other until they can be walking side by side with their owners. But this is another case where it takes time and patience. Most people don't have a lot of patience. More dogs get turned in for house training issues because the owner never bothered to house train the dog. Now they think it's the dog's fault. No, usually it's the owner's fault. Unless you have a problem that started because the dog is either sick or it's bad breeding, then you can pretty much take the blame yourself on something like this. But in the case of a dog who doesn't like other dogs, a dog-aggressive dog, something happened to set him off. You may be able to tell what it was. You may know exactly what day and what incident it was, or you may never know it. It may have happened when you weren't looking.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes things that don't bother us and that we kind of take for granted are huge issues to the dog.
Darlene Arden, thank you very much for joining us. If you want to find a link to Darlene's site, just go to our website and we'll have a link for Darlene and for this week's show. Darlene, thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith. It's been a pleasure.
And I was speaking there with Darlene Arden. You can check out her website, www.DarleneArden, that's DarleneArden.com. DarleneArden.com. But you can also find that link for this week's show at www.PCJmedia.com. All right, you're listening to the International Happy Station Show, and not too long ago, I was chatting with a group of listeners who live in Latin America. Let me think, who were they again? There was Santiago San Gil Gonzalez in, I don't remember which country. Sorry, Santiago. There was also Jorge Garcia Rangel, Jorge Mendia, and some others. And one of them was asking about some songs from Tom Meyer, and I sent him a batch of them, so hopefully he got them now. So we're going to play a song now for our Spanish-speaking friends who tune into the show. It's Tom's singing song in Spanish called Todo Terminó, here on The Happy Station, or in Spanish, La Estación de la Alegría.
Me olvidaré de tu vida, no buscaré más tu amor. Me has dicho tantas mentiras que no puedo más confiar en ti. Yo seguiré mi camino, tú por el tuyo te irás. Lo siento mucho, mi vida, pero todo, todo terminó. Estabas muy confiada y abusabas de mi amor. Sin pena me burlabas y mentías al besar. Sigamos siendo amigos, resultará lo mejor. Es bueno que te acostumbres, porque todo, todo terminó. Sigamos siendo amigos, resultará lo mejor. Es bueno, muy bueno que te acostumbres, porque todo terminó, porque todo, todo, todo terminó.
Tom Meyer and Todo Terminó. Now, another question actually that I have been asked for some time now is people have been saying, you know, is it possible to play some of the soundtracks from the TV show that I do in Japan? Well, yes and no. Before I get clearance for it, the show actually has to have so many repeats and be distributed by different means and all that before I can get hold of it. But just in the past 2 weeks, I've been able to get hold of some of the soundtracks from 2004, and we're going to feature some of them on the program. The one we're going to take a listen to now, actually, is it from 2004? Kevin, can you hold up the label that was inside? No, it's from 2005, December 2005. When my special guest on the show that I do in Japan was a wonderful Japanese singer by the name of Miko Hirota. And it was a show that we did tribute to Cole Porter and George Gershwin. But at one point of the show, she did another song by another composer, but it just brought the house down. And we're going to play it for you right now. Here's Miko Hirota from Japan with the NHK Big Band. Miko Hirota with On a Clear Day I Can See Forever with the NHK Big Band, taken from the TV show that I do in Tokyo. All right, well, that's it. That's all we have time for on this edition of the International Happy Station. It's been a pleasure to have you with us. Once again, our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and our email address, which I almost just forgot, pcjmedia@gmail.com. So, on behalf of our technician, Kevin Lee, our production assistant, Johan Backer, this is Keith Parent saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
Station PCJ, and now for the remainder of the program, my friends across the fence, in Central America, in North America, and in South America, and also on board of ships cruising the seven seas, we wish you good reception, a good voyage, and good arrival in the next port. When you come to the next port, drop us a line. Maybe you can write this line now, and post it when you come to the next harbor. Until the end of the program, we have some slumber music, and we hope you like our selection.